This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says economic terrorism constitutes an emerging threat to sustainable development. A Palestinian is shot dead in the occupied West Bank after allegedly killing and injuring several Israelis in a stabbing attack. Russia says Western-supplied arms and foreign mercenaries are priority targets for its forces fighting in Ukraine. This is World News from our Tehran headquarters. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Iran's Vice President Ali Salajara has addressed the UN climate summit in Egypt's resort city of Sharm el-Sheikh. He spoke about sanctions against Iran, calling them economic terrorism. The official said that the measures pose a threat to sustainable development and hamper efforts to improve air quality in Iran. Here's part of his comments made in that event.
Economic terrorism as an emerging phenomenon and resorting to it as an instrument of pressure constitute an emerging threat to sustainable development. The unjustifiable worsening measures that have been imposed upon my country have targeted the wealth and welfare of my citizens. Amongst others, such measures have seriously restricted access to transfer of financial resources, new technologies, and essential means required to take effective national steps in mitigation and adaptation as well as to improve on air quality. Additionally, unilateral and illegal sanctions stand in blatant contravention of global sustainable development agenda and the relevant multilateral agreements and have ramifications that stretch from beyond our national territory. In the face of such unlawful pressure, Iran, owing to the strive and perseverance of its young scientists, has managed to take important steps, thereby streaming development into a sustainable path to development.
The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. An EU statement says that 29 individuals and three organizations have been targeted over what it calls Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. The Interior Minister and several military and police officials are on the sanctions list. Press TV is one of the three entities blacklisted, too. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Iran has strongly criticized it, calling the EU move unfounded, illegal, and meddlesome. Now, Iran says Iraq's federal government has a responsibility to prevent any threat coming from the Arab country's northern Kurdistan region. The Iranian foreign minister says that Tehran and Baghdad enjoy excellent relations, so Tehran does not expect to be threatened from the Iraqi Kurdistan. Hossein Amin Abdullahian added that the security of the two neighbors can be guaranteed if they abide by the outcome of bilateral talks. He made a comment in a phone call with the Iraqi foreign minister. Fuad Hussein gave assurances that Baghdad would not allow any threat to go to its neighbors from its soil. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps already carried out fresh drone and missile strikes against terrorist bases in Iraq's Kurdistan. The force says that the strikes are a response to terrorist operations against Iran. Now, political commentator Samet Hijrabi joined us a short while ago with his take on the IRGC's operation in northern Iraq.
As you said, it's not the first time, and it probably won't be the last time that it happened. The problem is that we have a within the Kurdish areas in northern Iraq, a particular group, a family, which from previous years, from decades before, has very close relations with the Mossad, with the Israelis, and with the Americans. So the point is that that region is not uniformly supporting this problem. There are other groups and other parties and other movements within that area which are opposed to the presence of the terrorists. But there is one particular group and one particular family who, from long time ago, has been a group that has allowed the presence of the Americans, the Israelis, the British before, to be in that region. And from that region, this is something that goes back to the British division of the area. They created an area in the middle between Iran, Turkey, Iraq, Syria, from where they can always destabilize these countries.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has held a stabbing operation near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus that led to the killing of three Israeli soldiers. Hamas said in a statement that the move shows Palestinians' resolve to fight Israeli crimes and protect Al-Aqsa Mosque. Earlier on Tuesday, Israeli forces fatally shot a Palestinian man following a 7 attack near the Israeli settlement of Ariel. Three troops were also killed and three more got injured in the stabbing. The incident comes amid growing anger among Palestinians over deadly Israeli raids on their cities and towns almost on a daily basis. More than 140 Palestinians, including teenagers, have been killed in the West Bank so far this year. Earlier, we're joined by correspondent Ramallah Mona Kandil for the latest on the deadly incidents.
Israeli soldiers attacking Palestinians on a daily basis. Israeli forces raiding Palestinian areas, cities, refugee camps, and a daily basis arresting people from all walks of life, including elderly and women. Israeli soldiers are always quick to use to pull the trigger, let's say. But what happened today, according to the Israeli military, a Palestinian man arrived at a gas station and industrial park of the illegal settlement of Ariel, northern the occupied West Bank, and he stabbed Israeli settlers. This is what the Israelis are saying. He succeeded to flee. Israeli forces chased him and shoot him and killed him. 2022 witnessed the highest number of casualties, the highest number of Palestinians that had been killed by the Israeli soldiers. The Israelis don't want for the Palestinians to resist the Israeli soldiers to defend their lands, to defend their homes. They want them to remain silent.
Now, in other news, the Russian army says it's captured a strategic village in eastern Ukraine that can serve as a springboard for further advances on the Donetsk region.
On November 14th, as a result of successful offensive operations by Russian forces, the settlement of Pavlivka in the Donetsk People's Republic was fully liberated.
The spokesman added that Russian forces are pushing ahead with their offensive in the Donetsk region. In his daily briefing, Konashenkov also informed about the killing of a large number of Ukrainian soldiers and destruction of military hardware, including those supplied by the U.S. Pavlivka, a village some 60 kilometers southeast of Donetsk, had already changed hands early in the conflict. Meantime, the Secretary of Russia's Security Council says that Western-supplied arms and foreign mercenaries are priority targets for Russian forces fighting in Ukraine. Now, nearly 10 months into the Russia-Ukraine war, Moscow accuses Kyiv of failing to find any peaceful solution to end the deadly conflict.
Third world countries are calling for a peaceful settlement, call for agreements to be made quickly. They know perfectly well that Ukraine is dragging out this process, that the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky banned at a legislative level, banned holding negotiations with Russia by his order. So it's not a question for us. And that is what I said today to French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz during brief talks.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says that Ukraine is refusing to talk to Russia and has put forward what are called unrealistic conditions for peace. The top diplomat also slammed the West for its approach toward the Russian offensive in Ukraine, accusing the U.S. and its allies of provoking the conflict. Lavrov said that the West started the Ukraine war and has been preparing for it for many years. The Russian military offensive in Ukraine began on February 24th. The historian and journalist from Auckland, Tony Gosling, joined us a short while ago with his take on why the Russian president has decided not to attend the G20 summit in Bali.
It's all the time that NATO and their very close buddy Zelensky are insistent on not negotiating. I mean, actually, this war in Ukraine could be over tomorrow if there was people who were prepared to get around the table. But I think the reason Putin is not there in Bali is because he doesn't see much future with the G20 summits, rather like some of the other summits which happen, which are basically organised by... I mean, look at who it was that founded the G20. It was the IMF and the World Trade Organization. Both of those are Western-sponsored, or begun anyway, and largely Western-controlled organisations. And so is the G20. I mean, there's even the ridiculous situation where you've got the European Union and the French and the Germans and the Italians, etc., all there. And so all of those European countries, they get an extra vote. They get an extra place at the table because the EU there is too, as a separate country.
The top EU diplomat calling on the bloc's members to avoid competing with each other and work together in replenishing their military inventories amid arms deliveries to Ukraine.
We had made an effort supplying arms to the Ukrainian army. These arms were not produced on the spot. They were taken from the stocks. So the stocks have to be replenished. What is important? Important is to go together, to avoid to split the market, to avoid competition. We have to avoid what happened with the vaccines. No? Everybody together, all together, makes better price, better quality, and better time.
Now, Josep Borrell made those comments ahead of the defense minister's meeting in Brussels. The event is mainly centered on the question of supporting Ukraine as how to replenish a shared fund that member states have tapped to finance arms purchases for Kyiv. On Monday, Borrell told EU foreign ministries that the bloc has provided arms and military equipment worth at least 8 billion euros to Ukraine so far.
And I think I can say that at least 8 billion of military equipment have already been provided to Ukraine by the European Union and the member states. It's about 45% of the effort done by the US. So it's not negligible. We are talking about not 3.1, but about 8 billion on military support.
Canada has also announced it's doubling its military aid to Ukraine to $1 billion. The funds would go toward military, surveillance, communications equipment, fuel, and medical supplies. Canada has imposed sanctions on Russian justice and security officials, too. The bans target Russian police officers, investigators, and other officials who Canada accuses of human rights violations against opposition leaders. According to new figures, the UK's unemployment rate increased in the third quarter as the country is grappling with sky-high inflation and a wider economic crisis. According to official data, 3.6% of the workforce is now out of jobs, and that's a rise of a tenth of a percent on the second quarter. The inflation now standing at more than 10%, that's the highest level in four decades. Surging prices have prompted strikes across the nation. The industrial actions have cost the UK's economy more than 500,000 working days only in August and September. Meantime, energy bills and food prices are expected to continue to rise as more people lose their jobs. Hundreds of medical workers have taken to the streets in Argentine and capital Buenos Aires to protest low salaries and poor working conditions.
I feel sad. The truth is that they take away our vocation because we can no longer work like this and live like this with an undignified job. We have a great vocation. We do it non-stop for the patients. We love public health, but people have to know because they will always go to the hospital. No matter what coverage they have, they will always need the hospital.
Doctors and nurses held candles and carried banners that read, "Healthcare doesn't switch off." The protest was held almost 3 weeks after health workers began a push for an increase in their minimum wage, among other demands. A freeze in wages and rampant inflation have put pressure on staff in 30 public hospitals in Buenos Aires. Inflation is forecast to log a 100% surge this year. In Australia, hundreds of people have been rescued after flash floods hit several towns in the country's southeast. Rescuers have used helicopters to save the people trapped on the roofs and the worst-hit towns in the state of New South Wales. The residents scrambled to their rooftops to flee the floods caused by heavy downpours. The water has inundated houses, highways, bridges, and farms, and isolated many towns. Despite the halt in the raining, emergency crews are warning that a danger is yet to pass. Over the past year, Australia's east coast has been repeatedly hit with severe floods driven by La Nina phenomenon, which brings heavy rains. In recent resolution, the UN General Assembly has refused to recognize the Taliban interim government while discussing the situation in Afghanistan. Our correspondent says that not recognizing the Taliban could adversely affect the Afghan nation.
A resolution was recently presented to the UN General Assembly for the first time after the Taliban took over Afghanistan. While discussing issues including security, terrorism, and the social and economic situation, the Assembly significantly refrained to recognize the Taliban as a government. Experts believe this could affect the nation.
Non-recognition of the Taliban by the global community could negatively affect Afghanistan. It would bring illegitimacy to the Taliban government. It would also have consequences for the country's diplomatic relations, trade, and culture. There may even be more sanctions. These could have adverse effects on people, especially the poor.
In response to this resolution, Suhail Shaheen, the head of the political office of the Islamic Emirate in Qatar, said according to Islamic principles and values, the Taliban are committed to fulfilling all the legitimate rights and demands of the people, and that they are trying to provide the right means and environment to achieve this goal. Experts say the recognition of the Taliban could have positive results.
If the Taliban government is recognized after the observation of human rights and some other standards by the Taliban, it could have very good results for the nation, such as in the fields of international relations and international economic interactions.
Since the Taliban took control 15 months ago, their non-recognition, along with the sanctions imposed on the central bank and the freezing of Afghan assets, has driven the economy of the country to the brink of collapse. It is believed the recognition of Taliban may be a way to improve the situation in the country. But on the other hand, releasing assets and removing sanctions could also be effective. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
And that's a wrap for this news broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, pleasure and perfection. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone, you're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we're talking about the pleasure and perfection. Instance of pleasure can be found in a way that we don't get to see any multiplicity in them. For example, in the case of Almighty Allah, it could be said that enjoyment emanates from Him. Even though in this case, the bihjat, the interpretation, is more befitting as some scholars have remarked. In the same manner, with regard to man, it could be said that he takes pleasure from his own being, as his own being is dearer than anything else for him. For example, to gain knowledge, the presence of the scholar, the object of learning, and the trait of having knowledge is required. But its interpretative meaning also applies to the soul's speculative knowledge of itself, or even Almighty Allah's knowledge of Himself. Even though, in these cases, there is no multiplicity among knowledge. Now, the scholar and the object of learning likewise, the common meaning of affection requires the presence of the lover, the beloved, and the state of love, but no such external plurality exists in the case of self-love. So, in this case, in other words, all other pleasures serve as a reflection of his self-enjoyment because they have emerged in the process of reaching a face and perfection in his being.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program. We are talking about pleasure and perfection. Now, as we're talking about pleasure and perfection, we're looking at it from the perspective of the human being. That the human being always struggles, always strives to go towards what is pleasurable for him, and he is always trying hard to stay away from the pains and agonies of the life, pains and agonies that he meets in his life. Now, let's talk about the failure to derive pleasure in normal condition. We're saying that the failure to derive pleasure in normal conditions is due to inattention. Whenever man can pay full attention to himself and ignore aught else by the help of external factors, such as great dangers, exercises, and concentration, he will derive exceptional pleasure. For example, if a person is sentenced to death and considers the verdict binding, he will derive an unparalleled enjoyment when he later realizes that the verdict has been annulled. The verdict has been nullified. Of course, in this example, pleasure is related to being brought back to worldly life after being disappointed at it. Yes, it is good. It is a good example. Yes, it is a good example for our discussion as it elucidates man's love for life and his enjoyment of himself. This discussion, we get an outcome, and that is the pleasure experienced by man is either derived from his own being or his own perfection, or from other beings which he is in need of and is somehow related to. Thus, he will reach the most sublime status of pleasure if he can see himself tied to one who embraces all connections and links, and who makes man needless of any other dependence. If he finds his own being linked to him and sees no independence for himself, he will take the pleasure of independence from himself. Thank you so much for following up on this. Until next episode, inshallah, we're going to meet together. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo Jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Bahrain has held its general elections. The regime was delighted. Authorities in the Sunni-ruled state, which crushed a 2011 anti-government uprising, said that the vote was free and put the turnout at 73%. But the vote was anything but free and fair. Rights groups called the voting environment of what is supposed to be a democratic process as political repression. They said there were highly restrictive measures that barred members of banned opposition groups. They added, holding this general election will not address the atmosphere of repression and the denial of human rights that has gripped Bahrain for years. This, in essence, would make the vote a sham, that it would be void of holding any value. It was no surprise that Bahrainis took to the streets to protest the electoral process and announced that they would boycott the election, since it served the political trajectory of the ruling class. Bahrain experienced an uprising in 2011, still ongoing till this day, in which the Bahraini regime dissolved the main opposition groups and cracked down on dissent. The regime's crackdown over the past 12 years has been brutal. According to a 61-page report, the court is satisfied with the confession. Bahrain death sentences follow torture, sham trials. The regime has arbitrarily arrested more than 20,000 and tortured more than 6,000 victims. This also includes extrajudicial killings of more than 200 and political death sentences, the dissolution of opposition political societies, and the demolition of 38 mosques. And this is happening in a Persian Gulf country that is a key ally of the U.S. in the region, home to the U.S.'s Navy's Fifth Fleet, and also the United Kingdom, which opened a permanent military base in 2018. Powerful Shia cleric Shariza Qassem has said that the election means normalization. He said the elections constitute a test of the populace's awareness, explaining that to elect means opening the door for Bahraini citizenship-bearing Israelis to vote for parliament members. This would translate into how the electorate, meaning soldiers, dual citizens, security forces, those with personal interests in mind, and normalization advocates, would create a parliament for the government and not the people. The double standard approach by the UK and the US stands out when it comes to the issue of human rights and Bahrain. After all, Bahraini courts have convicted and sentenced defendants to death following manifestly unfair trials, based solely or primarily on confessions, allegedly coerced through torture and ill-treatment. The governments of the US and the UK, as well as the European Union and its member states, should urge Bahrain, through both public and diplomatic channels, to halt all executions, and to seriously investigate torture allegations and violations of the right to a fair trial. Yet they have chosen to do that with other countries, for example Iran, which ironically has rioters out on the streets, endangering Iran's national security. According to Iran's intelligence minister, both the US and the UK even have a hand in the deadly protests, like through the CIA. A recent visit of the Pope to Bahrain pose an opportunity for the plight of Bahrainis to be addressed. 130 human rights organizations appealed to the Pope of the Vatican to demand the release of prisoners of conscience in Bahrain. They asked them to adopt an initiative urging the Bahraini authorities to end violations. But those hopes are dim. These 130 human rights organizations have cited how so many Bahrainis have faced discrimination, jail time, and torture. Yet Bahrain has always shifted the blame to Iran for the unrest. Could 130 human rights organizations be wrong, or for them to be lying? But Bahrain ultimately cannot have a democratic process because its big brother Saudi Arabia, which is just a stone's throw away, will be threatened by democracy taking place next door and will vehemently reject this, since it cannot risk having democracy creep into the kingdom. After all, Bahrain is joined only by a causeway to Saudi Arabia.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian warns of negative consequences if the UNHRC were to go ahead with demands of the West. He criticized the Western double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. In a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, "Contrary to the UN Charter, few Western countries exploited the peaceful demands in Iran and encouraged violence and offered tutorials on building weapons and Molotov cocktails on media and social networks, which led to the killing of police and insecurity in Iran." He says that if a session is to be held on the riots in Iran, it should in fact probe into foreign governments' role in encouraging violence and terror and not on the country that is a true defender of human rights. What Amir Abdullahian is referring to is the piling evidence of actual foreign involvement in the riots, perhaps the most compelling of which was revealed through a joint statement by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and the Ministry of Intelligence. In it, the country's two top intelligence bodies pointed out the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the riots. They revealed that they have gone as far as dividing the riots in different stages of pre-unrest, during unrest, and post-unrest. Perhaps the primary way foreign governments, especially the US, UK, and Saudi Arabia, were involved was through supporting foreign Farsi-speaking media that played on people's emotions over a tragic death and capitalized on existing grievances to attempt to overthrow the Islamic establishment through something like a coup d'etat. Iran has warned the UK of consequences for hosting the so-called Iran International Channel, which Iran has recognized as a terrorist organization. Iran also warned Germany for voicing its support for the rioters and calling on the EU to implement more sanctions against Iran. Amir Saeed Iravani, Iran's permanent representative to the United Nations, responded to the US cries of women's rights and human rights being violated in Iran and its calls for a special session to, quote, highlight the ongoing repression of women and girls and members of religious and ethnic minority groups by saying this: "The United States lacks the political, moral, and legal qualifications to hold such a meeting, distorting the very basic principles of human rights." He also added, "The US has no true and genuine concern about the human rights situation in Iran or elsewhere." Perhaps he was referring to the role that the US has been playing in destabilizing the West Asia region and carrying out terrorist attacks there. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and Libya, and its unwavering support for Israeli crimes against Palestinians, don't even begin to tell the whole story on US's destabilizing acts in the region. The UK's involvement in Syria, funding terrorist groups, and being one of the coalition members of the fight against Yemen also nullifies their cries over human rights violations anywhere in the world.
As the war drags on in Ukraine, the gloomy economic outlook continues to trigger protests across Europe. Demonstrators in several European countries have hit the streets for pay rises and better working conditions. In the UK, tens of thousands of nurses will go on a strike for the first time, demanding better pay as the cost of living soars. The industrial action would begin before the end of the year, after the first vote on strike action in its 106-year-old history. Unions say that the salaries of nurses have dropped by up to 20% in real terms over the last 10 years. That has left members struggling to feed their families and to pay their bills. Hundreds of workers at London's Heathrow Airport will walk out in the run-up to the Soccer World Cup this month over demands for better pay. The 700 workers will strike for 3 days starting from November 18th. In Greece, workers have held a 24-hour general strike, which has seen thousands of protesters march to the streets of Athens and the northern city of Thessaloniki. Clashes also erupted between protesters and police forces. And the French capital, Paris, commuters have faced transport delays as metro workers called a major one-day pay strike. Unions have staged strikes across several sectors in recent weeks, seeking pay hikes or increased hiring as spiraling energy costs feed into widespread inflation. The protests come amid a gloomy outlook in Europe as Russia's war in Ukraine takes a rising toll on Europe's economies. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that Europe's advanced economies will grow by just 0.6% next year. It also says that this winter, more than half of the countries in the euro area will experience technical recessions. Germany, which is considered EU's biggest economy, is also expected to go into recession in the next year.
The German economy has been built on cheap energy, cheap gas from Russia, and this business model is over. So Germany has to fasten to produce renewable energy and then go back on track with its business model. But this will take a couple of years.
Technically, a recession means that at least two consecutive quarters of shrinking output will occur. Next year, Europe's output and income will be nearly half a trillion euros lower as compared to the IMF's pre-war forecasts.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections is projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our World Economic Outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year. Inflation hit a historic high of 10.7% last month. Given the historic levels of inflation, the European Central Bank has announced three rate hikes this year, bringing the main rate from negative territory to 1.5% currently. Soaring costs with energy have been the main driver of higher inflation across the Eurozone.
From the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, to block the certification of the presidential election results to the October 28th attack on U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home, these incidents are among the most high-profile instances of political violence in America in recent times. Now, many believe the problem has gone from bad to worse in recent weeks. Harassment of political candidates and voter intimidation have been reported in many parts of the country, prompting some local authorities to elevate vigilance on Election Day. Also, threats against members of Congress are up tenfold. According to Capitol Police, more than 9,600 threats against members of Congress were recorded last year. Threats against federal judges have spiked 400% in the past 6 years to more than 4,200 in 2021. Also, election poll workers have received hundreds of violent threats, leading many to resign from their positions and discouraging others from volunteering in first place. Analysts believe the current trend of increased threats to lawmakers and election officials, extremist candidates running for office, disinformation and heated rhetoric are raising the risk of domestic terrorism and other forms of extreme violence in the United States. That's why a new survey suggests that almost 1 in 5 Americans agree that violence is sometimes needed to protect democracy when elected leaders will not. Therefore, U.S. politics is now in danger of spilling over into street violence. As an answer to unwanted results, nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions have intensified to the point that there is a risk of politically motivated violence in the United States, and the 2022 midterm elections could act as a catalyst for future domestic extremist violence in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden has sounded the alarm over threats to democracy in his closing arguments ahead of the midterm elections.
Democracy is on the ballot. Political violence and intimidation are on the rise all across America. And you remember January 6th, the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked law enforcement, hunted down elected officials, erected gallows to hang Vice President Pence. Well, West's opponent supported that mob. Who the hell do they think they are?
Biden has called on Americans to accept the election results and avoid resorting to violence. Also, former U.S. President Donald Trump said he's expecting a Republican victory in the elections. Trump has also vowed to make a big announcement next week, hinting that he is going to run for the 2024 presidential election.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House. I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida.
The 2022 midterm elections are the first vote since the January 6 Capitol riot. Democrats have been campaigning around what they call the threat a Republican win would pose to U.S. democracy. Republicans, however, have focused their campaign on such issues as soaring inflation and the scale of violent crimes. Dozens of Republican candidates who could be elected as governors or elected administrators in key states have also echoed Trump's claims of fraud in his 2020 presidential election defeat. Election forecasters predicted that Republicans are likely to pick up roughly 25 seats in the 435-seat House of Representatives, more than enough to win a majority.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds So stay tuned. Ya Mawlaya fa kayfa yabqa fil adhab wa huwa yarju ma salafa min hilmik am kayfa tu'limuhu an-nar wa huwa ya'mulu fadlaka wa rahmatak am kayfa yuhriquhu lahibuha wa anta tasma'u sawtahu يشتمل عليه زفيرها وأنت تعلم ضعفا. Dear listeners, we have reached this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. أم كيف يشتمل عليه زفيرها وأنت تعلم ضعفا. How should its groaning encompass him while you know his weakness? أم كيف يتقلقل بين أطباقها وأنت تعلم صدقه. How should he be convulsed among its levels while you know his sincerity? أم كيف تزجره زبانيتها وهو يناديك يا رب؟ How should its keepers torture him while he calls out to you, O Lord? أم كيف يرجو فضلك في عتقه منها فتتركه فيها؟ How should he have hope of your bounty in freeing him from it while you abandon him within it? As we mentioned in the previous episodes, one important aspect of the supplication the supplicant needs to be aware of is that he must brought his need and indigence towards the Almighty Allah alone. This means that prior to bringing this need towards the Almighty Allah, he needs to be aware of his own indigence and faqr, his own da'af. As this part of the supplication says, وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ ضَعْفَهُ. You, as Almighty Allah, as His Lord, know His weakness. Now, the comprehension of our ontological neediness and indigence is the very secret by which we can discover one important aspect of supplication, which is its relation to response. This would lead us to understand how prayer and supplication can be the key to Almighty Allah's mercy and how important and effective it can be in attracting the mercy of Almighty Allah. So we will try to discuss this comprehension of this neediness and indigence in the couple of programs from now. We'll continue our discussion, dear listeners, after a short break.
My Lord, then how could he remain in torment when he hopefully relies upon your past forbearance, compassion and mercy? And how can the fire cause him suffering when he hopes for your grace and mercy? And how can its roaring flames char him when you hear his voice and see his plight?
Thank you, Allah, that we're here feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, in this part, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, أَمْ كَيْفَ يَشْتَمِلُ عَلَيْهِ زَفِيرُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ ضَعْفَ. How should his groaning encompass him while you know his weakness? This neediness, haja, and faqr is that secret we're going to discuss. In fact, every prayer embodies a certain degree of this perception of poverty by the supplicant, because it denotes a level among the levels of realization of one's neediness toward Allah. the more one's awareness of his need toward Allah, the closer he would be in his prayer to acceptance, and the closer he will be to the mercy of Allah. Now, the explanation of this relation is somehow clear if we think. This is because there is no such thing as miserliness in the mercy of Allah. And we might somehow see some differences among the people in the mercy of Almighty Allah. Of course, it is true that there is difference, but this difference among the people is solely due to the differences of the people in the receptacle of their souls and their capacity. So, it is nonetheless amazing that the ontological neediness and indigence, this faqr and haja, and one's awareness of such neediness and indigence is the receptacle of man through which he obtains the mercy of Allah. Such that the more this awareness of the neediness toward Allah, the greater his receptacle in which he receives Almighty Allah's mercy. This acts somehow like a container. So the more you understand that you are in haja and in total faqr towards the Almighty Allah, the greater and bigger somehow this container would be. Allah the Exalted gives everyone according to his own capacity. Everyone procures Allah's mercy according to the wideness of his receptacle. The greater the receptacle, the greater one's share from the mercy of Almighty Allah would be. So, based on what we have said earlier on, and up to now, we can summarize the reality of prayer and supplication and say that when we see such beautiful words and phrases in the supplication of Kumail, this is because in the first level, the supplicant has this ontological need and faqr toward Allah. This is ontological and it is for everyone and everything. The second aspect, and the second level better say, is that he has percepted the need, that ontological need. And third, he has presented that need before Allah. We will try to explain more this part and aspect of the supplication in the next episodes. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.